Come on, all you big strong men, Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam, way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun, we're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn, the next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven, open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. I man, this is war, a go-go. There's plenty good money to be made, supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just hope and pray that if they drop the bomb, drop it on a Viet Cong.
Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 425, January 25th, 1980, and it's side one.
It's five, six, seven, open up pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we all gonna die.
That song was recorded at Woodstock, summer 1969, by Country Joe and the Fish. It makes fun of the Wall Street profits of war and the generals and the motivations for sending people off to war. The unfortunate thing is that the Woodstock generation dispersed and got involved in the me generation instead of studying the consequences of the war with the same energy that they fought the draft. The assembly of large masses of young people was to fight going off to Vietnam, but when Vietnam was over, they didn't continue the studies or the energy considering the rest of the world that could be raped or murdered by the same people. They then went into what became known as the me generation, the hot tub macrame, self-delivery of your own babies, an awareness of the individual's body and the foods, which is fine, you know, the concern for ecology, but not studying the very same generals and the news media and the propaganda machine that gave them one war, and now 10 years later they're faced with another war. My objection to a lot of the political activism of the 60s was that as the assassinations and murders became evident and obvious, and the people that were doing them were gaining in political power in this country, that these same activists, the Vietnam veterans against the war and so forth, dropped out. Their biggest political activity is to check out their own poisonings for Agent Orange or their physical disabilities and disadvantages, that they're not getting the same shake that other veterans got after other wars. But stop wars, no, they've never worked to continue as a large group. The so-called left or the activists of the 60s simply dropped out, and all of a sudden they wake up 10 years later with a new war in the Middle East and not new faces, the same people making another war, only in a different place. Its political activism will rise up again, particularly as Jimmy Carter gets the youth signed up, ready for conscription. But they're also meeting places such as in Utah and Nevada, where people are objecting to having the MX missile located on their ground. And I think we're going to see a resurgence of people on the streets. And hopefully they will someday not meet individual problems, their single problems, but will reach out and see their problems as part of a world problem and try to understand the history of our times, particularly since the end of World War I, and why we get into these troubles in the first place. My shows, the radio broadcast from KLRB, were played in Utah for a long time, and there's a station now that's going to resume playing them on the air. So for all of you people there, young or old, we're following the effect of the MX missile. This is a multi-billion dollar project, $33 billion actually, for the MX missile in Utah and Nevada. The area was selected because, in quotes, it was just a worthless desert for deploying missiles. This is from the New York Times, where it actually is a delicate ecological balance that supports ranchers and herders. Now, the problem that the people are complaining about in these cities and meeting in large masses is that there'll be more people, more crime, and more pollution, not to speak of the deadly pollution. But the main thing is that the MX missile is like the Maginot Line that separated France and Germany. It will actually serve no purpose, and by the time it is assembled, as I say, the $33 billion project, it will not be useful to the defense of the United States. I don't believe it will. And who would want it on the soil? And the consequences are so tremendous that you people just can't even begin to feel the pain. The government, the Air Force, just sent in a $1 million check to a Western Regional Commission for Utah and Nevada to study the environmental studies of the MX. It's good for business, it solves unemployment, and it keeps everybody filled with a lot of energy of construction. But I am sure that there's people in these states and cities that realize that the entire tone of this country will change, as well as the pollution and disease and the consequences of having this there. And right now they are meeting politically to preserve their open spaces and confronting some of the problems that they will face once the Army moves into Utah and Nevada. I'm not going to comment about President Carter's speech. As I say on these tapes over and again, he's a graduate of Annapolis. He's a military man. He was shrouded with a protective cloak, the broad smile and the teeth, Greg Allman and the rock bands, and Barbara Jordan, the black woman, and Mr. Lipsitch, the Jewish lawyer, while the Bilderbergers, Prince Bernhardt, the Council of Foreign Relations, the Wall Street clique put him into office. And then within 3 years, he shed his cloaks, and he is anxious to set up troops and arms to control, if we could, which I don't believe we can, the Middle East, the Persian Gulf. And if we succeed to foul that up like we did Vietnam, and the 80s are the year for refugees and huge wastes of money and contracts in the Middle East, then 20 years from there they go to South Africa, and then maybe another 10 years they'll be in the United States fighting on our soil. We'll be fighting each other. That's all I see from this continuous feeding of arms. The Washington Post, January 13th, has a wonderful article called The Iranian Arms Bazaar, and it has to do with a Blue Water base that cost $8 billion that the Shah wanted in the Indian Ocean. When you read the people that are making the contracts over in Iran, you can see how angry they are about the hostages and how delicate they are to not go in and make war and anger the Iranian people, because eventually they hope to continue using Iran as a buffer to fight the Soviet Union someday. And the same people that made the war in Southeast Asia have moved their contracts over to the Middle East, and they'll continue to make more. The CIA is going to go full scale with anything it wants, and the arms merchants will too. The Iranian Arms Bazaar article from the Washington Post has estimated costs. It has different projects they were making: the IBEX, the Sikh Entry, the Chabahar, Peace Log, the F-14, the F-16, the Spruance Class 993, the Sikh Switch, and the helicopters. And these are the corporations. IBEX is a CIA monitoring system, supposed to be the largest of the whole area, that could monitor the Soviet Union, Turkey, Afghanistan. $500 million has been put into it. The companies building it are Rockwell International, Watkins Johnson, Hewlett Packard, E-Systems, and iTech. The Sikh Entry is a computerized air defense system, costs $120 million plus. AWACS is airborne radar systems mounted on Boeing 707s. The estimated cost would be $15 billion, and the companies are Westinghouse, Hughes Organization, Texas Instrument, and Boeing. The Chabahar was an $8 billion project built by Brown and Root, the same company that built the Tiger cages and the cement for and the air landing strips for Vietnam. A lot of that stock is owned by Lady Bird Johnson, widow of Lyndon Johnson. Their family accrues a lot from Brown and Root. Of course, the Hughes Organization with Robert Mayo and the CIA was the umbrella for the assassination teams that kill the candidates and people that make the arms merchants possible, that you get the warfare state in place of those people who would coexist with the Soviet Union and de-escalate this war. That Peace Log is a project, automated logistics, at a cost of $350 million by Lockheed Aircraft. The F-14's $2.3 billion project for 80 airplanes built by Grumman Corporation, one at Long Island, and 77 of these were for Iran. They're all grounded now. F-16's $3.6 billion project of 160 aircraft by General Dynamics. Of course, the Henry Crown, General Dynamics, Albert Jenner connections to the Kennedy assassination. I've done tapes on that. Each one of these huge corporations had a part or a finger in the assassination umbrella network that killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, and they're going on for bigger oceans now and control of the world. But these were contracts for F-16s for General Dynamics $3.6 billion. The Spruance Class 993 destroyers cost $2 billion. These are contracts for Iran, the Iranian arms bazaar built by Litton Industries, the company that overthrew was a cover for the Greek military junta. Roy Ash and Litton Industries in 1967 put in the Greek military junta and the Nazis back into power. Luckily, the Greeks were able to overthrow them within a seven-year period, but this dictatorship was put in by the CIA just as we put the Shah of Iran in. And Seek Switch, which is an automated upgrading of Iran's national radio and telephone communication systems, put in by it cost several billion dollars by American Telephone and Telegraph subsidiary Peace Crown Military System. $200 million into that, the communications, radio, and telephone. And then the helicopters, a series of commercial and government deals for 1,000 helicopters at a cost of $1.8 billion built by Bell Helicopter. And, of course, I've done tapes on Bell Helicopter. And Mr. Miller, the Secretary of the Treasury right now, being in head of Bell Helicopter. And, of course, each one of these corporations, Bell Helicopter, AT&T, Litton Industries, the General Dynamics, Grumman, the Hughes, the Lockheed, Westinghouse, Texas Instrument, Boeing, Hewlett-Packard, E-Systems, iTech, Rockwell International, have on their payroll, all of them, German Nazi scientists that came over here to do microwave satellites, communications, missile systems. They were part of Adolf Hitler's army. They were used and created by Adolf Hitler, and they were brought over to this country in Project Paperclip. Those 642 experts have been dispersed among all these corporations that are making multi-billion dollar contracts, and of course the taxpayer pays for it. The wars are our family and sons, husbands, brothers, uncles, you know, you name it, men and women that have to fight these wars. And the weapons are built and purchased by these various countries built in America. So it's very necessary that Jimmy Carter make overtures to Iran and stay calm, because the main thing is that we would have a depression if we didn't keep making these weapon systems. And because we're building for that war in 1985, we have to have the Iranian arms bazaar going. It controls the whole Middle East. You can't really blame the Soviet Union for running into little Afghanistan at a time that our hostages are being held and we're at bay. Because if the Soviet Union feels a war is imminent, maybe they're going to push it now before the arms bazaar escalates again. January the 11th, on tape 423, I went into the arrest of Frank Turple of the CIA and George Kirkala from New Jersey, his partner, and their arrest at the Hilton Hotel in New York City. This is a story that is still very suppressed, and I want to update this information about the arms merchants that has come out. Just has been several articles, and not a lot. All that I have from around the country are two articles from the New York Times. There was an article January the 11th, 1980. This is an article, the lead story is indicted ex-CIA employee labeled by prosecutor as a major world arms dealer remains an enigma. The writer from Washington, D.C. for the New York Times referred to Frank Turple as an enigma. For those of you who don't have those past tapes, I'm not going back to fill you up on this. These are just briefly men that have been arrested who are linked to international arms that are funding what is known as the Third World, which is really tied up to Adolf Hitler's money in order to get Iraq, Syria, the Palestinian Liberation Group, and Idi Amin's Uganda. And when Amin was out, the money still can keep rolling in for weapons. The so-called Third World is funded by men from the CIA and from United States corporations in France, Great Britain, the United States, to assist us eventually to gang up against the Soviet Union. The New York Times article, as I say, referred to Turple as an enigma. James McCourt and E. Howard Hunt were enigmas when they were arrested at Watergate. They'd worked for the CIA for 19 and 21 years. And they were supposed to be made as little bumbling gumshoes, the Keystone Cops, until James McCord started talking. These people have important connections, and the word enigma put out by the media is just to make you think there are no answers to what they're doing, but the answers are there. If there were some journalists out there pushing the story, the answers are there. This New York Times article talks about one the business office 2020 Connecticut Avenue in Washington, D.C., next door to the Icelandic Embassy, across the street from the Maltese Chancery. It's an American base for Frank Turpel. It's owned by Capital Investments. It's not owned by Turpel at all, and now it turns out that it's a Liberian corporation, but the names of the people who run it are not listed. Of course, Daniel Ludwig in Brazil, an American citizen who lives in Brazil, is going to leave his money to Switzerland, to a medical institute for cancer, has his tankers under the Liberian flag, as does Aristotle Onassis. And again, going back to the Nazi international corporations, the oil tankers are listed in Liberia, and this building is owned by Capital Investment. The land record shows it was bought in 1977 for $210,000 and then was first under Turpel's name and then, in quotes, erroneously conveyed, actually owned by Capital Investment. The home that Mr. Turpel lives in McLean, Virginia, is less than 1 mile from the Central Intelligence Agency. He worked for the CIA, for the National Security Agency, for the Army, spying and coding, classifications, and radar work. His home is also listed by Capital Investments of Virginia Incorporated. The one building is in Virginia over several hundred thousand dollars and a $20,000 swimming pool. The office is in Washington, D.C. The Capital Investment in Washington owns the office, the Capital Investment in Virginia, the home, and yet they're not listed in any corporation or partnership records in Virginia or the District of Columbia, according to the New York Times article. The building and the business and the home and real estate have been involved for the past 3 years, 1977, 78, and 79, but this doesn't clear up the mystery of the men. Jimmy Carter came to Washington after the 1976 elections, and these men linked to Libya, weapons to Libya, to Gaddafi, and of course Billy Carter and Robert Vesco, and that can of worms is linked down to the Libyan government and to Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter's problems are being hushed up in regard to the investigations of these connections. They're going on right now in Washington, just as the Burt Lance case is going on in down in Georgia, and the Hamilton Jordan cocaine grand jury investigation is being hushed up now. There's a can of worms of the Carters to these very people that are being investigated, and this is the reason I think it's being hushed up. These men were arraigned in New York City, charged with conspiracy, criminal possession of weapons, and other charges, and they'll appear again January 31st in the New York State Supreme Court. The Washington investigation, the grand jury investigation, was going into Frank Turpel a while back under possible violation of Foreign Agents Registration Act and Munitions Control Act. I mentioned on the tape 2 weeks ago the Oceanic International Corporation, that Washington-based concern that Frank Turpel works out. It's also headquarters for a company called Technology Transfer Group. And they're separate. They're listed as separate companies, but they have interchangeable men and employees for both of them. And Michael L. Enfant, president of Oceanic, said that the charges about Turpel are too far-fetched and unbelievable, that they're wild stories that exaggerate his activities in Africa, but that he is a consultant and representative and that he travels overseas, and that his job is to sell foreign governments and companies and armies boats, generators, fire engines, and other U.S. products. He also is supposed to have sold $3.2 million worth of weapons to Idi Amin in Uganda. But Mr. Enfant says, infant mentality maybe, that he was selling uniforms and musical instruments to Idi Amin. So that Uganda must have a wonderful orchestra right now in uniforms if they got $3.2 million worth of uniforms and musical instruments. Not aware that much music is coming out of there except screaming. The Oceanic International and the Technology Transfer Group are both owned, as I say, by Capital Investments Limited, which is a Liberian corporation. A man who used to be treasurer of Oceanic, who resigned, and you remember, many of you remember the Watergate stories, as soon as somebody was suspected or linked for a group, they would say a former member, they resigned. A Mr. Don Randall was interviewed for the New York Times, and he said that Mr. Turpel's business for Oceanic was pretty doggone vague, that he came back with a lot of money. Somebody put up the money, It was always a legitimate business, and if Mr. Turple did anything improper, he did it without the company's knowledge. Well, you can work for the National Security Agency and the CIA and send weapons all over the world and assassination weapons and silencers, and that wouldn't be considered improper. It may be considered national security, just as the Shah of Iran had collars with electricity or garrotes to choke off people's necks. He didn't think that was improper. He thought that was for interrogation techniques. So the word improper used in the New York Times is interesting and typical the way the news media carries things. But there was this money, and they didn't know where it was coming from, and it's international. And Mr. Randall said that he was mystified by Turple's overseas activities and that he himself didn't share in the profits that Turple was reaping. Of course, he earned a living at the corporation, and we don't know what he was doing, and he may have considered $100,000 earning a living. We don't know if he made $20,000 or $200,000. He disassociates himself. Another woman, Laura Ripley, used to be a vice president of Oceanic. I remember James McCord's wife was on the board of directors of McCord Associates when he, in quotes, left the CIA and still worked for the CIA and security of the White House. Laura Ripley said, "I used to see a lot of money floating around the office I left in 1978 when I was disillusioned in October 78," and claimed that the cash flow suddenly stopped because of violations of human rights in Uganda, that the weapon flow, the money from Uganda, wasn't coming in. But that doesn't explain what they were doing in the office. As a matter of fact, Laurel Ripley said in the New York Times article that Mr. Frank Turple had CIA connections, and I was under the impression that Mr. Turple was reporting to the CIA even while he was in Uganda. While he was in Uganda, he reported to the CIA, which would mean, you know, that the CIA was giving material weapons to Libya, Uganda, the Palestine Liberation Organization, and reporting back to the CIA that this interchange of money and weapons was flowing back and forth. The people working for Oceanic, some of them, moved away from the organization, although they admit there was all this money. And the organization was one, the home of Mr. Turple was just one block from the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, this Frank Turple's wife, Marilyn, worked for the CIA, worked in past tense. Of course, as soon as somebody is arrested, the CIA has what they call disassociation or disavowal. That's one of the conditions of working for the intelligence community, is that you get picked up or arrested, they don't know you anymore, you're out on your own. And Mrs. Turple was a makeup artist, or is, for the Central Intelligence Agency. As soon as he was arrested, it's the past tense for the New York Times, but she could be working up to the day he was arrested at the Hilton Hotel in New York City. Here was Turple with all of his contacts of the intelligence community, and his wife was a makeup artist, or is, for the CIA. Frank Turple also worked, according to the New York Times article, for police and law enforcement groups at Oceanic International Corporation, a technology transfer group owned by this Liberian corporation, not listed in Virginia or Washington, made for local governments and schools and hospitals what they call French boots or Denver boots. And those are devices used to immobilize illegally parked cars. There's a recent article on how the Soviets took over Afghanistan and they had some kind of nails or something in the roadway that stopped the vehicles from moving, the tanks and so forth, to move while they came in. And yet I know we have these made, and they may be even dispersed to our local police departments in the event of riots or martial law, that you immobilize cars or trucks so that people can't get from one place to the other. Again, the same link of Turple to E. Howard Hunt and James McCord at the time of planned martial law in 1972 or a possible military takeover. E. Howard Hunt, at the time of his arrest at Watergate, had maps of Washington, D.C., and the main arteries all blocked off. And James McCord was in charge of the 16-man unit military control in the event that they took over the government, the security of the government. So this corporation, with people working for the CIA, a husband and wife, are making and distributing what they call French boots and Denver boots to immobilize cars. Forget just the illegal cars, but what would you do if there was a call to war or resistance or a military coup in this country? George Kerkula, the partner of this, who was also arrested in New York City, the partner of Frank Turple, has the Amstec Corporation. And for those of you who don't have the back tapes, they're a security system. You'll have to order the other tape, as I say, that makes security for Scotland Yard, for Exxon and Mobil Oil Company, just a few. It's a large electronic security system. But according to this article, as the early articles, they work for the federal agencies, the United States agencies, and equip the Secret Service. They make security equipment, booby traps, bombs, firearms, and Kirkorla's lawyer said it was a legitimate work for the federal agencies. And his name is actually Corala, K-O-R-A-L-A, not Corcala. There's not a double K in there. I keep mispronouncing that name. The lawyer also says that the Amstec Corporation works for the Secret Service. It makes radiation detection devices. It protects the President of the United States. You see, we have these bombings in New York City of the Soviet embassy, the Cuban embassy, bombings at LaGuardia Airport, terror, blaming Falm Francis Tavern in New York City. Here are corporations that have such weapons, booby traps, firearms, bombs. Remember the ice cream truck that blew up in New York City and exploded on the street? And under the guise of being a protective device for the President of the United States, you have these unknown people with corporations, hundreds of thousands of dollars in buildings. Liberian Oil, it isn't linked to Liberian Oil Company, but Liberia is where the oil tankers are registered overseas, and links to the international network of what I call the Odessa and the spy networks in continuation of World War II, and assassination weapons and silencers and protection, end quote. So you can see how when Robert Kennedy was a candidate for presidency in 1968, and he's at the Ambassador Hotel, his security guard, Thane Caesar, was from Lockheed, and he can shoot a weapon standing behind Robert Kennedy and shoot from the ground up, hit him close to the ear, and then fall to the ground and shoot through his back. And the presidents, the candidates, are not protected. The very people that are, in quotes, protecting them, Secret Service and so forth, are linked to these international, well-funded organizations that have direct links to the Central Intelligence Agency. Technology Transfer and Oceanic were both incorporated in 1977, right after Jimmy Carter got into Washington, D.C. They haven't found a legal connection between the two, but they have people responsible to both companies. And as I say, they work for Secret Service, presidential protection, the federal government, local police departments, and make weapons and bombs and booby traps. And that's just a part of the domestic United States links. There's international links that are much, much broader. There was a follow-up to that article, the January 11th article in the New York Times, January 17th, into some of the international connections of this group, these two men that were arrested. And also, again, it goes to the Central Intelligence Agency, the arms dealers, and the London connections, which also go down to Monte Carlo. And that, of course, was a can of worms with Aristotle Onassis and Hallmar Schacht, the band that financed and put Hitler into power, who had Onassis build the German and Japanese fleets after World War II and get back into the weapon industry at that end. For some of you, as I say, we're new at these tapes. I'm throwing out names and countries, and all I can do is A, apologize, and B, study some of the books and past tapes and try to catch up with this. The January 17th article, gun running suspects are tied to a British dealer, and this is the New York Times by Mr. Apple, R.W. Apple Jr. The British police sources said they have linked a Samuel Cummings, one of the world's largest private arms dealers, with two Americans. Now, the article later goes on to say that Samuel Cummings worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. Cummings was born in Philadelphia in 1927, worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. He set up Inter Arms in England in 1953. Mr. Samuel Cummings and his associates in Great Britain are not arrested or involved because the British investigation is, in quotes, dormant. They haven't broken British laws to send weapons all over the world. The British police have confirmed that these weapons belong to InterArms Corporation, the ones that Frank Turpel and George Kirkola have, and that there's a network financed that sends weapons, as I say, to Libya and Uganda and the Palestine Liberation Organization. This international group is linked to two more people identified as Douglas Schlachter and Joe Cook Sands, who are not available. They were out of town, according to the New York Times. And an Ernest Ralph Warren. Mr. Warren, a little-known figure with wide connections in the arm trades, is a retired lieutenant colonel in the British Army. Early in the 1960s, he served as a military attaché at the British Embassy in Washington, D.C. They're speaking of the years in which John Kennedy was assassinated when America had its coup. In the case of Turple, Corcalla, Samuel Cummings, and Mr. Warren in Great Britain is another one of those great tips of the iceberg, and each little view gives us another piece of some of the missing puzzle sections that I'm trying to put together.
Generals, let's move fast. Your big chance is here at last. Now you can go out and get those reds, because the only good commie is one that's dead. You know that peace can only be won